Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to Atlanta Legal Experts radio show. I am your host, Emily Rowell, with attorneyofficespace.com. We also have Rich Casanova. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Emily.
And he's with Buckhead Business Radio X.
Excited for the show. Man, you got a great lineup this morning.
I do. Thank you. So our special guests today are Laura Reese with Reese Law. Good morning.
Good morning.
We have Darrell Champion, with the Champion Firm, PC.
Good morning.
And Alan Hamilton with Shiver Hamilton.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Doug Dumont with the Warshauer Law Group.
Good morning, Emily. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. And I will start with Laura's bio just to let you learn a little bit more about Laura. She is the founder of Reese Law, a Midtown firm dedicated exclusively to the representation of injured workers and their families. Laura has successfully handled thousands of workers' compensation cases and procures millions of dollars for her clients every year. She currently serves on the GTLA's executive committee and is on the board of governors of both AAJ, the National Trial Lawyer Association, and WILG, the National Workers' Compensation Organization. She has been named the Super Lawyer Magazine, to Super Lawyer Magazine as a rising star for the past 3 years and is a national member of the National Trial Lawyers Top 100 and their Top 40 Under 40. You can see the rest of her bio on our website at al.businessradiox.com. And we're just so glad to have you here.
Thank you, Emily. What a great introduction.
Thanks. You definitely have the expertise to be on Atlanta Legal Experts. That's for sure.
Well, I love what I do. Right now, I do 100% workers' comp, and it's all dedicated to representing injured people and their families. At this stage in my career, I was able to take out the other practice areas that I used to do, which allowed me to specialize with what I wanted. A lot of injured workers have third-party claims and additional sources of recovery. So I've brought three legal experts that specialize in third-party claims, and we're going to be talking about that in just a few minutes.
I do want to talk
a little bit about workers' comp. Absolutely. And what it is and what your benefits are, or if you're an attorney, what your client's benefits are under the Act.
Well, thank you. And what is workers' comp, and how is it different from other injury claims?
Well, workers' comp is administrative, kind of like Social Security, except for you're recovering against an insurance company, your employer's insurance company, whereas in Social Security, you're recovering against the government. So they're both benefits that you're statutorily entitled to. Back before 1920, a workers' comp case was just like a regular tort claim. In order to recover against your employer, you had to prove that they were at fault. So during the Industrial Revolution and, you know, going through history, a lot of injured workers would lose a hand or, you know, stick their hand in a machine or something and suffer horrible injuries. And there was no recovery unless the employer was negligent. Mm. So they made workers' comp no fault.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter how the accident happened, but as long as you were at work when it occurred.
Okay. So if somebody is injured at work, do they have to file for workers' comp?
Well, chances are there's already an existing workers' compensation claim. If you're injured at work and if you're receiving workers' comp benefits or maybe even just medical treatment, there is a claim that exists. So okay. When you file your claim, you're just entering appearance in your own existing claim for the most part. Now, I do get clients who come in who have never filed it under workers' comp because they just thought it would go away or something like that. And we go ahead and do the initial claim filing. But that's pretty rare. Usually if they're injured at work, their employer's already turned in the injury to their comp carrier.
Okay, because they're actually being responsible.
Sure. One thing that's different about workers' comp, and it's unlike tort cases, is your employer is involved from day one. The insurance adjusters are involved from day one. Almost like a big trucking collision where the investigators from the insurance come to the scene right away. Workers' comp's always like that. So you always have other parties pushing back on you. They have their adjusters, their case managers, and the employer. And they're all forming a team and trying to get their results. So we like to think of our role as a workers' comp attorney as your team too. They have their case nurse managers who know a lot about every injury and how much it's worth. They know their exposure. So you really need to hire an expert to help you evaluate what you're owed. I've never had a client in the 11 years that I've been practicing workers' comp come back to me after the fact and say, man, I wish I had never had filed this claim. Sure, people right. wish that they had never been injured, but mm-hmm. that's already something that's happened. We can't take that back.
Right.
So the American judicial system allows for monetary recovery. And so that's what we are helping our clients get.
And if a claim is already filed, like you were saying, the employer files the claim, why should the injured worker actually hire an attorney at that point?
Well, you need to know what your rights are. Not only are you entitled to lost wages or a portion of your lost wages and medical treatment, you're entitled to second opinions, mileage, reimbursements for a lot of things. And you also, to some extent, have control over your medical treatment. And a lot of injured workers think that they just have to go where their doctor sends them. Mm. Since a lot of my cases involve third-party recovery, it's really important that as the workers' comp attorney, number one, I'm able to conduct targeted discovery to help my third-party attorneys, one. Two, I also want to be careful not to create negative medical evidence. A lot of the workers' comp doctors are just focused on getting an injured worker back to work and aren't really documenting the symptoms or, you know, even the psychological injuries or the depression and stuff like that, that might not be covered under workers' comp. But it's really important on third-party liability. In workers' comp, because it is no fault, you do get rid of the pain and suffering part of the equation. So you can't recover that in workers' comp, but you can recover that in a third party case. And that's a huge source of where the recovery from the damages come from. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. It's important in workers' comp that you have somebody who knows the rights, one, but also has a legal support team to coordinate the benefits, to coordinate the medical care, to timely file motions and objections and things like that. Workers' comp is paperless. Everything's filed through ICMS, which is the Integrated Claims Management System.
Okay.
So if you're a workers' comp attorney that doesn't do a lot of workers' comp, you don't have access to that portal. You don't have access unless you've signed up for it. So at our office, we're all paperless, and we file the claims online and are able to get things to the court, to the opposing counsel, all your medical records and stuff just electronically. So it really helps streamline the process.
That's nice. So you do form a team for these clients, patients.
Absolutely. In my office, I have a dedicated person to set up medical appointments. That's her job. Is she schedules IMEs, change of physician and doing things. I have another person in my office that solely files things online. So she opens the claims, she processes the case numbers for the adjuster and things like that. So that's her dedicated job. So after we take a case, after we meet with the injured worker or their family, we file electronically and we do a thorough medical review. This involves getting, you know, we're in an electronic age now. So we look at your existing records. We also look at prior records that might have an impact on your current case and determine if we do need to get you out of the doctor that you're going to right now.
So is that all that takes place for the claim filing process?
That's pretty much it. We've been doing it for a long time, so we have a pretty good system. And then we keep in touch with you as far as where your case is, what your case status is. At my office, I litigate probably about 80% of my cases, meaning that I actually file for hearings, which results in a lot. You get a lot better results that way. And instead of dealing directly with a claims adjuster, you're dealing with the, you know, workers' comp defense attorney. And so in order to get a fair, decent recovery, you really need to litigate. You really need to go through the deposition process and the motion and exchange discovery, I think, in order to get a good result. There may be a reason why you don't want to file suit on the case. And, you know, that's dealt with at the time. And it's definitely a strategy decision that we, you know, look at.
If I have a workers' comp case, can I go after my employer for negligence?
Generally speaking, no. We have an exclusive remedy here in Georgia. So if you're injured at work, workers' comp is your route. You can't sue them in tort. Now, there's a few extenuating circumstances, like where you only have a psychological injury or something like that, where you could possibly go after them for, you know, intentional infliction of emotional distress or something that's not covered by workers' comp. But generally speaking, workers' comp is your sole recovery. However, in today's age, everybody's outsourcing everything. For example, if you work at a factory, chances are that the production line works for one temp agency, and the people driving the forklift work for another agency. Mm-hmm. And so when that happens, you have to look at who works for who, because if it's not your employer that caused the accident, you can absolutely make a third party claim. So as a comp attorney, you need to be familiar with additional claims. Some examples are, whistleblower actions, a defective roadway action, labor, wrongful termination, even medical malpractice. If the doctor doesn't follow the standard of care, then you might have an action against him. And Doug's going to talk about that in a second. Also, if you take defective drugs that cause damage that was not contemplated. Intended. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. You can file, against the drug manufacturer. So there's lots of additional claims. And then what if you're at physical therapy and you get hurt worse, mm-hmm. the physical therapist breaks something or tears something. I guess you might have a claim against them, but you also have another workers' comp claim too, oh, wow. because that's, part of the workers' comp. So you really have to look at everything.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you do, and you have to hang with them through the entire process. And also, to use multiple attorneys that specialize in their field is probably better than just one attorney.
Sure. Well, it makes sense. You want to hire, you don't want to hire somebody that does everything. It's just right. like if you had an unlimited, in litigation, you get charged a percentage of the recovery generally in what we do. And workers' comp's limited at 25%. If you have a third party action, usually those are, I think, about 40% recovery. But if you hire a specialist who's really good, you're going to get a much better result, but you're not sure. paying anymore. You're not paying any more at all. You're gonna do a lot better and get what's just mm-hmm. by hiring a specialist. For example, everybody knows that big discounters like Walmart and Target, they carry a bunch of stuff and you can get everything you need. But if costs were no object, why would you only shop there?
Right.
Why wouldn't you go to a specialty boutique or a specialty store? Go get your food from a butcher shop and right. or from a fresh market, and then you can
get your hair done from a real salon.
Right, right. And so there's, buy clothes at a clothing store instead of just buying your clothes at Walmart. I think if everybody had that option, they would use that. Right. And that's why you hire a specialist. So you don't get somebody who's a master at nothing, really.
And you don't have to pay for it.
Right, mm-hmm. right. There's no additional cost. So why don't you get the best quality that you can and really go from there, because there's no additional cost or time involvement.
So if you could tell me a little bit about your office and your practice and, where you're located and.
Sure. I'm located in Midtown Atlanta, between 12th and 13th Street on Peachtree. And, we have a full support team and are bilingual English Spanish. I also live wonderful. In Midtown and, I've been living in Atlanta, came here for law school and never left. I love the city. And what we do is we try to think outside the box when we have an injury. For example, if you have an injured worker with an amputated finger, for example, mm-hmm. we don't just look at the percentage of disability to your body because you're missing a finger and then, you just pay for the medical to close up the finger. We're looking at complicated prosthetics, complicated therapy, things that really restore people back to how they were before the accident.
Wow.
So when you're looking at an injury, you have to think about how if you have a knee injury over time, you're going to have a back injury. So you have to anticipate those things and make sure that your client gets fair compensation. I'd like to turn it over to the third party specialists so that they can fill us in on how they do what they do and make magic.
Absolutely. Thank you. You really know what you're doing, and it's wonderful to hear the dedication you have to your clients.
Thank you, Emily. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Darrell Champion is a trial lawyer. Good morning.
Good morning.
With significant experience representing plaintiffs in a variety of catastrophic injury and wrongful death cases involving serious car and trucking accidents, premises liability claims, defective products, medical negligence, and railroad accidents and injuries. He has represented plaintiffs in every federal district court in Georgia, the Georgia Court of Appeals and Georgia Supreme Court, and numerous state and superior courts throughout the state. He has helped recover millions of dollars on behalf of his clients, and in each of the last 3 years, Georgia Super Lawyers has recognized him as a rising star in the area of plaintiff's personal injury litigation. In June 2014, he founded his own law firm, the Champion Firm PC, where he specializes in personal injury and wrongful death cases, insurance disputes, and constitutional rights cases.
Thank you for that introduction, Emily.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here. And another question for you. If you are injured on the job, are you limited to workers' comp benefits?
Well, as Laura said, generally your exclusive remedy against your employer is going to be the workers' compensation system. It is important, however, to always look and see if there's any third parties that are liable, because even though your employer may be immune, the third parties aren't necessarily going to be immune. So it's always important to have an attorney who's experienced in evaluating those types of claims. Look and see if maybe there's a third party that could be on the hook for the damages.
Okay. Okay. What kind of claims exist for on-the-job injuries apart from the workers' comp claims?
Well, just about any type of personal injury claim you could imagine outside of the employment context can also exist for an on-the-job injury. Some examples would include a product liability claim, a medical malpractice claim, as Laura talked about. You could have a premises liability claim, and even just something as simple as a basic car wreck case can exist if you were operating your car in the course of your employment.
Oh, wow. So even if you had like a company car too.
Exactly. If you're operating a company car and somebody else is at fault, you can always sue the third party who's at fault and at the same time get workers' compensation benefits from your employer.
Wow. How does a person injured on the job know whether they have a claim against a third party that is separate from a workers' comp claim?
Well, I think that's why it's important to talk to an attorney. And generally, when you consult with a workers' compensation attorney, especially somebody like Laura, who's very experienced, she can identify potential third-party claims and, you know, maybe refer you out to somebody who will be able to handle the third-party claim and evaluate it in more detail. But it's very important to do that as soon as possible, especially for product-related injuries. You know, the statute of limitations in Georgia is generally 2 years, but there's a separate statute of repose that applies to product liability claims. Generally, you can't bring a design defect claim more than 10 years after the product was first sold. So, you know, if you get injured on the job and let's say the product was purchased nine and a half years ago, you know, you can't just sit there and think, well, I've got 2 years to bring the claim against the manufacturer, because if you think that, you're going to be in trouble when you try and bring a strict liability design defect claim.
I mean, that sounds like every insurance person says when you get in an accident, the first thing you want to do is call your insurance company.
Exactly.
So whenever something happens at work, you want to call your attorney as soon as possible.
Exactly. And I think that's very important. And, you know, pretty much every personal injury and workers' compensation lawyer I know gives free consultations. So there's really no harm in doing it. And if you don't need a lawyer, you know, somebody who's a good qualified lawyer will tell you that. If you do need a lawyer, then you can retain the attorney, and most of the cases are done on a contingency fee.
Okay. If a person receives workers' comp benefits, also receives money from a third party for the same injury, does the injured person have to pay back their workers' comp benefits?
You know, in Georgia, the what they call the lien statute does not have, you know, any teeth, really. The general rule is the workers' compensation carrier doesn't get paid back unless and until the plaintiff is fully and completely compensated for their injuries. I have handled a lot of third-party claims where somebody was injured on the job and have never come across a scenario where a workers' compensation carrier has been paid back a penny. I think the workers' compensation carriers realize that it is almost an impossible burden to meet, especially in a catastrophic injury case. There may be some circumstances, though, where you want to enter into some sort of agreement with the workers' compensation carrier where you'll agree to pay back a portion of the benefits in return for cooperation outside of the formal litigation process. So maybe you'll be allowed to informally interview their employees. Maybe you'll get access to equipment, inspections, and things like that that you wouldn't otherwise get.
Okay, if a person who is driving their employer's car, like we were talking about earlier, is involved in an on-the-job car accident, should that person also notify their own insurance company?
Absolutely, and I've run across this a number of times lately, whether it's an on-the-job car accident or, you know, anytime people are not in their own car and they're in a car accident, they don't think to tell their own car insurance company because they think, well, my car wasn't involved, why would I tell them? The reason that it's important to notify your own insurance company, though, anytime you're involved in any kind of accident with a car, whether you're a pedestrian, riding a bike, or in somebody else's car, is because you may have what's called uninsured motorist coverage, which will provide coverage to you if the third party that caused the accident either doesn't have any insurance or doesn't have enough. Mm-hmm. And a lot of insurance policies, pretty much everyone I've ever seen, has a timely notice provision, which requires you to give timely notice of a claim to the insurer. And if you fail to do that, your insurer can deny coverage. So if you wait 6 months, 8 months, or whatever, thinking, you know, well, I'm going to see if I can get better and negotiate the claim on my own, and you don't notify your own car insurance company and you need that coverage, you may be in trouble.
Maybe too late.
Yep.
How does a person have to bring a claim? How long, sorry, does a person have to bring a claim against a third party?
Well, the general statute of limitations in Georgia for personal injury claims is 2 years. There's some different rules that might apply to toll the statute of limitations, and that always needs to be evaluated by a qualified attorney. In addition to that, though, is what I talked about is the statute of repose with product liability claims. And that's something that I've run up against a lot is as soon as somebody's injured on the job due to a product and you want to see if there's a product liability claim, you need to get in there and inspect the product as soon as possible, figure out how old it is to see whether it's a claim that you can pursue. If you're getting close to that 10-year time frame, you need to evaluate it even quicker and go ahead and try and file suit.
Okay. Yes, Laura.
And then also, Darrell, isn't there a statute when you are going after a county or a government entity or a city or state? What is that? Like, how short are the claim filing deadlines in that instance?
Exactly. Well, you've got what's called anti-litem notice provisions whenever you're going to sue a government entity, whether it's a city, county, or state. The time frames are different depending on whether it's a city, county, or state. So you always need to look at a qualified attorney to be able to give the anti-litem notice. And I know also that the statute was just amended recently to specify, at least with cities, who has to get the specific notice. So it's very important that you comply with that. And that's a great point, Laura.
Yeah, and so the statute on that or sending the deadline to send the anti-litem notice could even be just 6 months.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If it's a city, it could be much 6 months. Shorter. If it's a state entity, you're going to be generally looking at a year. Same thing with a county. Mm-hmm. Something that can save you, though, is you can generally always sue a city or county employee. They're entitled to certain immunities, but if you didn't comply with the anti-litem notice, there might be some ways to get around that.
And so that's something that a specialist like yourself might know, that just your general litigator who handles road wrecks and just everything. Possibly know.
Right.
Exactly.
So tell me a little bit about your firm, where you're located.
Well, I started my own practice about 3.5 weeks. I previously worked with Doug Dumont, one of our other guests here at Warshauer Law Group. I was an attorney there for about 4 years and decided to go out on my own. I specialize in personal injury and wrongful death cases, and my office is located in the 600 building over in the Galleria by Cumberland Mall.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you for having
me. Hope it wasn't a hard trip to get down here.
Oh, it wasn't that bad.
Good. And I'm going to introduce Alan Hamilton with Shiver Hamilton, LLC. He focuses his law practice on significant personal injury cases, wrongful death, and business torts. Alan has helped numerous clients obtain 7- and 8-figure verdicts and settlements, appearing before courts in 9 different states. Since co-founding Shiver Hamilton in 2011, Alan and his partner Jeff Shiver have obtained a series of far exceeding the insurance company's best offer. Alan has been recognized as Legal Elite by Georgia Trend Magazine and as another super lawyer and rising star by Atlanta Magazine. He has also been named Top 40 Under 40 by the National Trial Lawyers Association. Say that 10 times fast. And Alan decided early on to dedicate his career to representing injured victims of negligence and corporate wrongdoing. After law school and a federal judicial clerkship, he turned down job offers from several major corporate defense law firms to pursue law practice representing plaintiffs. His practice and experience includes automobile wrecks, commercial vehicle and tractor trailer crashes, business torts, product liability, dram shop alcohol liability, road defect cases, workplace injuries, premises liability, negligent security, and wrongful death. And you can see the rest of his bio on the website at al.businessradiox.com. How do I know, Alan? First of all, good morning, and thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
How do I know if there's a claim for on-the-job injury separate from workers' comp?
Well, the previous guests have covered this in some detail quite well. There are a wide variety of contexts in which there are viable claims to go after either an insurance company or a corporate interest who bears some legal responsibility outside of workers' comp. And Laura covered earlier that workers' comp is a no-fault system. All you have to prove is that you're on the job and that you have some related injury to that. In the world of third-party claims, or what we call tort claims, in the civil justice system, we live in a world of fault. And the most common theory or legal term for that is negligence. It simply is a reference to someone not doing what a hypothetical, ordinary, reasonable person or company would do under the similar circumstances. So we see this in just about any serious injury case, and especially if you've got a great workers' comp attorney who's very seasoned in spotting these issues, it should be part of your first conversation with that workers' comp attorney is, do I have other potential avenues of recovery? Are there defendants other or potential defendants other than my actual employer who may bear some degree of responsibility for what has happened? And that's critically important for those injured parties and their families, because workers' comp, there's a trade-off. In exchange for a no-fault system where you get the benefit, even if you cut your own foot off by your own fault on the job, in exchange for that, you have a fairly limited remedy. It's formulaic. I only know enough to call Laura, but it is statutorily prescribed. It is very complex, but they do not allow you to go after what often is the most significant category of damages. Damages is just another legal word for what are the harms and losses related to what's happened to a family, to an individual. And so what's commonly called pain and suffering covers the rest of that. But it's really oftentimes in our practice the most important part of what's happened. That's the human losses. That's the things that really make us tick, that really make our lives meaningful and rewarding. And the only avenue to pursue justice for that is usually the civil justice system in a third-party claim. So broadly stated, you ought to be talking to your lawyer about third-party claims anytime there's a serious case on the job.
When we sign up and meet with a client and do their intake, we do screen for third-party claims. But then we found it very helpful to also send our client a letter reminding them if you believe anybody other than your employer is responsible for this accident, please notify us immediately in writing. And so that kind of jogs their memory if on the day that they do execute the contract, they're not thinking clearly and then later they have a time to think. We send that to them and definitely remind them about other claims that they might have.
Yeah, because when they're first, like you said, they're in shock, they're not thinking clearly, so then they have the time. Sure. And then you kind of send that letter like, look, you can have more claims possibly.
Right. And like Alan mentioned, there's pain and suffering and other sources of recovery that are not contemplated under workers' compensation. But also in workers' comp, you receive 2/3 of your weekly wage, which is calculated right before the accident. So, if you are just getting started in your career and kind of had a low paying job, you're going to get 2/3 of what your salary was for the average of the 13 weeks before your accident. And if you had been on vacation for a week or, just kind of work part time, it really does affect your comp benefits.
Wow.
And even if you are a high wage earner, you're limited. If you're injured today, you're limited to $525 a week, which is tough if you're a professional or a skilled laborer, and you're used to getting a lot more than that, or upwards of 1,000 plus a week, you're not going to be benefited by the workers' comp system. So in tort, like Alan was saying, he can also predict what you would have made, hire experts to predict how your wages would have increased over the years. That's something that comp won't pay you for. They only pay you 2/3 of your weekly wage when the accident happened. And if you're catastrophic, you could get that for the rest of your life, but there's no increase. You're stuck at that number. So Alan, when he's handling these third-party cases, he's going to bring in experts that can show somebody who's young, just getting their, just starting out in their career, maybe like a junior electrician or an apprentice, how much they would be making and how much their income would increase over their lifetime. And then also how their injury, their loss impacts other family members. Mm. Workers' comp does not pay anybody for that.
Mm. Wow. Sure. And I think sometimes the best way to flesh out these kind of topics is with examples. And one very rewarding experience that our law firm had was several years ago when they were building the multi-billion dollar expansion of Hartsfield-Jackson. A young man with three young children was run over by a dump truck and killed on the site while they were grading for the new international terminal.
Oh,
and at first glance, of course, that is certainly an on-the-job injury. So there's certainly a workers' compensation angle to that. But one of the areas where you often see a complex but important analysis to go through is, are there third-party claims in the context of construction projects? Because there are always multiple layers of contractors. There's owners, general contractors, and multiple layers of subcontractors. Mm-hmm. There's something called a statutory employer doctrine that allows the workers' comp exclusive remedy. We call that the bar, that you can't sue your employer. It flows, in general terms, it flows up the line from one's own direct employer to subcontractors and the general contractor above that employer in the chain of responsibility on the construction project. In that particular case, though, you're dealing with a young man and minor children who are left behind without their father and their source of income to face a long period of time.
Sure.
And the remedy from workers' comp would have been, was quite limited. But through an investigation and litigating all the way through trial and actually a second lawsuit against various contractors involved over an insurance contractual issue, we were able to obtain almost a $6 million verdict for them in DeKalb County and then collect that down the road after even more litigation. So it's very important to go through the steps of who is a third party that can be pursued and who is the actual employer and what other entities may be entitled to claim the benefit of the workers' comp bar and which can't.
That sounds wonderful that you were able to do that. When should I contact an attorney separate from a workers' comp lawyer?
It can't ever hurt to do that. I would advise to talk first to your workers' comp lawyer about this, and you ought to, as part of screening and choosing who you're going to hire as your workers' comp lawyer, it should be something they bring up. And if you think there may be legitimate third-party claims and that wasn't even an interest or an issue that your potential workers' comp lawyer spotted, that could potentially be a red flag. Certainly, I know a number of workers' comp lawyers, and in particular, I know Laura always goes through this with people.
Mm-hmm.
But it can't ever hurt, and when in doubt, most lawyers, our law firm, for example, always to any client, any potential client, offers a free, no obligation consultation. You can sit down with one of our senior partners if you'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
You can call and schedule that appointment, and there are many other firms that will similarly offer that. We don't operate on a fee system where you owe us to talk to us. Only our interests are aligned with the client. If we can't come up with a viable avenue of recovery, no one ever owes us anything. So it really, if the injury is serious, that would potentially justify seeking avenues outside of workers' comp, it is almost never a bad idea to first start with your comp attorney and second look to where can I find a specialist who may have experience with this type of case that I have.
Thank you so much. What types of on-the-job injuries most often involve a third-party or non-workers' comp claim?
Well, some have been covered. One that I think is, aside from construction, which we talked about a moment ago, another is called premise liability. And that refers to the duty that owners and occupiers of land, of commercial property, of buildings have under Georgia law to keep their building, their land, what's called their premises and approaches safe or reasonably safe. And it's a reference again back to that concept of negligence and what does an ordinary reasonable landlord do under similar circumstances. Oftentimes, your direct employer will be leasing space. I have a case right now where there's a warehouse where my client worked. Her employer leased the warehouse, but there's an old dock door that the owner had put in the 80s when they built the building, and nothing had been done to it for decades. And of course, this is a warehouse where trucks back up to the door, and there's a 4-foot high ledge there where the trucks back in.
Mm-hmm.
And on this particular day, she was the unfortunate victim of that door collapsing down on her, which knocked her out of the warehouse, and she landed awkwardly and had just an extraordinarily horrific fracture to her leg and ankle and foot. And in that scenario, that's a perfect example of you cannot sue your employer, the lessee, the occupier of the building, but the owner of the building, the landlord, still has obligations with regard to that property to keep it reasonably safe. And we're still in the middle of litigation there. In these cases, unlike perhaps a car wreck, which those often are complicated as well, but sometimes they're not. I mean, sometimes an insurance company will call the victim in a car wreck case and say, well, you know, we caused it, so let's try to work this out. And most of the time in the workers' comp scenario, it is very difficult to pierce through to have an insurance company understand that they have exposure beyond the workers' comp bar without someone without an attorney on your side that is willing and able to dig deep, to get the facts, to find the witnesses, to find the evidence that you're entitled to that will prove, in fact, mm-hmm. there's responsibility there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your expertise. I'm going to go now to Doug. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. So enjoyed it so far?
It's great. I appreciate you having us, and really am happy to be in a room with Laura and Darrell and Alan, who really are the legal elite. And I heard rising star multiple times for mm-hmm. each of them. And it is true. I mean, these folks are absolutely the rising stars as far as lawyers who represent people in Atlanta and in Georgia and really the Southeast.
Thank you. And Doug Dumont is here. He joined the Warshauer Law Group over 7 years ago after working at an insurance defense firm. This experience gave him an important understanding and familiarity with insurance companies and corporations and how they approach lawsuits involving serious personal injuries. Although Doug enjoyed the attorneys he worked with at his prior firm, he realized that his calling was to join a team of Georgia personal injury lawyers representing individuals and their families. Fortunately, he was given the opportunity to work with lawyers like Michael and Lyle Warshauer, who have dedicated their professional careers and much of their personal lives defending those wrongfully injured and their families. As a member of our team of Atlanta personal injury attorneys, Doug works every day to plan, strategize, and prepare cases to secure the best compensation for individuals and families who are injured as a result of carelessness of others. He now feels his successes truly make a difference and improve people's lives, which is very rewarding. You can hear the rest of his bio again on our website. And let me just start with, do you have to pay back your workers' comp benefits? We've kind of discussed that prior.
We did.
What do you have to say?
We touched on that earlier. You know, the system in Georgia is kind of interesting. I don't know if it's a silent agreement, but it's always felt like that. Georgia has a very strong bar, as Alan was saying, as far as workers' compensation. It is very, very difficult, and there are very few exceptions to the workers' compensation bar. In exchange for that, it seems like the workers' comp carriers enjoy that protection and then realize that it is a very rare case when the employee is not or is actually made whole and is obligated to pay back any of the money they receive in comp benefits.
I get letters all the time from the workers' compensation, another department called the subrogation unit. I get letters sent to me all the time when they think that there's a third-party case, and they'll put us on notice of a quote-unquote lien. What should a workers' comp attorney, what should somebody do when they receive that kind of notice?
We kind of treat those notices like those emails you get from the attorney in the UK who found a relative of yours and has a lot of money, and you just send them your bank account, and they'll send you some money in yours. We write them back and just say very nicely that our client's been, you know, catastrophically injured. Here's what they've been through. They will not be made whole no matter what the resolution of this case is. And, we appreciate their lien and, you know, we don't plan on paying it back. And like Darrell said earlier, I don't know a scenario when we've actually done it, except for strategic reasons, which would be access to employees' equipment like Darrell was talking about earlier.
do you find it helpful? I know in lots of my cases, or in all of my cases where there's a third party component, I try to protect the third party attorney. I try to protect that specialist, mm-hmm. no matter what claim they're pursuing. And so when I do resolve the workers' comp claim in the settlement documents, I always try to require that there's no subrogation. Is that helpful or?
Oh, yeah. And Laura, you know, Laura is very good at what she does. And I wish every comp attorney who sent us cases would do that. It is absolutely something that you should try to do because it really is it helps your client out no matter what happens in the third party case. You've certainly cut off the amount of money that they would ever have to pay back, which ultimately puts more money in their pocket. So that's a great idea, Laura, and I wish everyone did it.
And even though they don't necessarily have a right to get money back from the case to get reimbursed because the injured worker is not made whole, it does avoid unnecessary litigation among the parties, and it definitely saves everybody on our side time and money, including the client.
No doubt. And like I said, when we send a letter back and say we don't plan on paying back the lien, they can always take that to litigation and try to get the money back. But when you do what you were talking about, Laura, and actually get them as part of the comp settlement to agree to waive that, then it's a sure thing. And I'd always take a sure thing over something that's not. So it's a great idea.
I have a great question here. What if my employer won't cooperate with me in my case?
Well, and that's when we talked about the strategy of possibly paying back the employer. We had a case several years back where the employer was not cooperating and we couldn't get access to witnesses. So we proposed, they're called ladder agreements. And what it says is after the plaintiff has been gets X amount of compensation, then you start to pay back a percentage of the comp benefits, 10%, 20%. And we had offered that to the employer and actually ended up getting access to the employees and the property without having to enter into that agreement. But it started discussions and had the employer start to cooperate with us, which really helped us prosecute our case to have access to those witnesses. And really in a case like that, you want the co-employees to be on your guy or your woman's side. It's very important, and the flip side, it's a very difficult case where they say, hey, this guy's really unsafe and he shouldn't have been doing that, and we've told him a million times to wear the seatbelt when he's driving that forklift or whatever. So you want to find that out early and not be surprised in a deposition. So having the cooperation of the employer and knowing what if there are any skeletons in the closet ahead of time is really invaluable.
Okay. And let me ask you about what do you think your most rewarding case was so far? Or if you can generally.
Yes. You know, it's funny. The cases, it's the cases that you work the hardest on and that you had the most ups and downs on are the most rewarding ones. As far as past cases, we had a case in, representing a gentleman named Doug Birchfield. Doug lost his legs. It was actually a third-party case. He lost his legs while working for a company out in Covington, Georgia, and a rail car had run over his legs. And he was able to get comp benefits from his employer, and the comp attorney sent it to us to look at. And we ended up suing the railroad company who had dropped off that rail car a couple of days earlier because the brake on that car was defective. Wow. And we actually tried the case the first time. We lost it, appealed it, got the case back, retried it, and got over a $20 million verdict for Mr. Birchfield. So that was the most rewarding case because it was – I mean, Doug is like a family member to me. We spent so much time together, and the ups and downs and the emotion of literally, you know, losing a case and then being able to try it and being able to get a verdict that takes care of Doug and his family for the rest of his life was incredibly fulfilling. I'll never forget that moment.
Hmm. And tell me a little bit about your practice also. Where you're located.
We're over in Vinings. We just moved offices, and we specialize, I would say, primarily in three areas. Railroad is really a specialty that we have that not many attorneys in this state have experience in or should be doing. We do medical malpractice. Lyle, one of my partners, is top-tier medical malpractice attorney, she lets me help her out every now and then with those cases. And then Michael really specializes in products liability cases, which are also third-party claims like when a forklift is defective at work. You have the comp benefit. So a person's riding a forklift and, the load shifts or the downriggers don't work and it tips over and the worker's injured. Well, Laura will get the comp benefit started and they'll start to get their, income, 2/3 of their income, as well as their medical taken care of. And then parallel to that, she'll call us up and we'll look at the forklift and we'll see this defect. And, it could be a couple different things. It could be the company that rented the forklift to his employer and they didn't maintain it properly. Mm-hmm. And a hydraulic hose broke and it was frayed and it should have been replaced before they even delivered it. Or it could be a forklift that was designed poorly from the beginning by the mm-hmm. manufacturer. And a lot of our cases are those types of cases, whether it's a scissor lift, a lift truck, a forklift, those types of things that people use at work, that have defects that cause the injury.
Gotcha.
The medical malpractice that I talked about earlier is something that people don't think about either. Just because you got injured at work doesn't mean that the doctors, even if they're on the workers' comp panel, shouldn't exercise reasonable care. Standard of care is the terminology in medical malpractice when taking care of you. So whether it's a surgery after the fact, whether it was a trauma that you get life-flighted and they're doing trauma surgery at Grady or Atlanta Medical, those doctors, nurses, and hospitals have a responsibility to do that, to use reasonable care when they do that and follow mm-hmm. standards of care. And if they don't and your injuries become worse than they would have been otherwise, then that's a potential third-party case as well.
Right. And Laura touched on that earlier.
Sure. Well, Doug, I wanted to ask you about the medical malpractice. It's my understanding that these are tough cases and expensive cases. And there's certain requirements, like you have to get affidavits, you have to have your experts lined up before you even file suit. Why is it important to hire an attorney that has done this before?
Sure. Thanks, Laura. Medical malpractice is not the low-hanging fruit, and it is something that if you do occasionally, you can find yourself on the other side of a legal malpractice suit. They are expensive cases. There are a lot of ins and outs. It was funny. We were just talking before this. There was an article in the Fulton County Daily Report about a law firm that lost a medical malpractice case after working it up for several years on directed verdict. And that means they got to trial, they put forth their case, and before it even got to a jury, the judge said, you don't have a case, and they lost it. Yeah. And the thing that struck me about the article was the law firm handling it said, we're a small firm and this is the first, case we've handled. Well, everyone's got to have their first case, but having it be a medical malpractice case is not ever a good idea.
Right.
Even with the best facts and the best plaintiffs and the best experts, they are very, very difficult cases to win. The American Association of Justice did a study a few years back, and they found that right around 95% of the cases, the doctors win, which means the injured people win about 5% or 1 in 20 cases. So they're very difficult cases, and you have to have the right attorneys, the right experts, and the right affidavits and all that up front to even have a chance to recover in those types of cases.
Right. I'd also like to open this up to a roundtable with the question, do you think that insurance companies kind of keep track and know who's actually trying the cases, going to court, filing the lawsuits? Do you think they take who your attorney is into consideration when you're going, when you're litigating the case?
Absolutely, I do, and I'd be interested to hear what Alan and Darrell say, but I do, because ultimately when the rubber meets the road, 90-whatever% of our cases settle, and we know that, but you have to be able to take the case to trial, and you have to be willing to lose the case. You can't be afraid to go out there and try the case and hang it out there, and it is a difficult thing to stand in front of a jury and a judge and to put it out there, and you have – I mean, we've tried cases where we've had hundreds of thousands of dollars in our own expenses, and it's easy to be risk adverse and to sell it for less than the case is worth. But I think when choosing an attorney, you need to choose somebody who has gone to trial, who's willing to do that, and I think the insurance companies ultimately respect that.
And the answer is absolutely yes. I mean, they tell us they do, and despite how big the bar is, the bar of lawyers in Georgia is, the trial bar, the people who are actually in the trenches trying a variety of types of personal injury cases day in and day out, is probably smaller than it maybe ever has been. I mean, there have been a lot of studies and conversations about the disappearing jury trial, and there are whole firms of teams and legions of corporate lawyers who've never really even seen the inside of a courtroom. And one of the things that we have kind of built our law firm on, and there are other great firms that certainly do this, is that we value a case and we will go to trial over the valuation of that case and not sell our client short. I think one of those serious problems that plaintiff's lawyers are sometimes fairly maligned for is it's hard for clients, it's hard for injured people to be able to tell on the front end who the lawyers are that are really willing to go try their case and who is going to ultimately see what the insurance company puts on it and then turn and talk their own client into settling for whatever the insurance company ultimately wants to pay. And so I think I would suggest one of the things we tell people is ask the lawyers that you're interviewing if you have a serious case, when's the last time you tried a case? Have you tried a case like my case? And those can be telling questions because, unfortunately, it's not always those who are most visible to the public who actually are spending their time honing their craft and trying cases.
Right. For example, in workers' comp, I see a lot of clients and a lot of injured people that have third-party claims. And I think it's important when I have a client, like yesterday I got a call about a medical malpractice case, and I knew immediately, you know, this is one that I want to send to Doug because he's done this before. Mm-hmm. It might not be a case that would be profitable for our clients to pursue, but he's the expert at that, so he's going to evaluate that. Right. When there's negligent security, I know who to call. When there is a whistleblower action, I know who to call. So I think it's important to have an attorney that has access to who the best specialists in mm-hmm. Atlanta, Georgia, the Southeast nationally are. And that's the importance of getting to know people in your practice area and outside of your practice area. Mm-hmm. In workers' comp's very doctor driven because what the doctor says goes. That the doctor determines what treatment you get and whether or not you get weekly workers' comp checks. And so when my client needs a neuropsychologist or when my client needs some particular specialty like a rheumatologist or whatever, somebody who is specifically only treats the SI joint in the back, a good workers' comp attorney is going to know what doctors practice mm-hmm. and what specialty and which ones are going to not hurt your case and get you better. And also, on the attorney side, who and where to send and when to send the case out. A lot of comp attorneys I encounter will take the workers' comp case and run with it and say, hey, well, let me try my hand at the product side of the case. Mm-hmm. And like Doug said, these are really expensive. A lot of firms don't have the resources to fund the case throughout. And sometimes they're taking the cheaper way out by mm-hmm. instead of doing a video deposition of the doctor, they're relying on just getting his narrative in or something like that, which saves the lawyer a lot of money up front, but can hurt the case mm. on the back end.
Right, absolutely. And what Laura said, I think is true. And what Doug and Alan said, whenever you're looking to hire a lawyer, it's important to hire somebody that isn't what I call a settlement lawyer. You know, the vast majority of cases settle, even for people that try cases regularly. But you've got to prepare the case like it's going to go to trial, and that's what's going to get your client the best result. And not only do the insurance companies know, you know, who tries cases, but of course the defense lawyers do too. And if you're in the middle of litigation, if the defense lawyer knows there's no way you're going to try the case, you're probably not going to get the best offer. Mm. And I think the same is true in the workers' compensation context. I mean, Laura said that she brought up a great point when she started talking earlier that she litigates a lot of cases. She right. probably knows there's Most a lot of workers' compensation lawyers that don't fight as hard as she does for her clients that might just take the easy way out and the easy check. And so that's why it's important, whether it's workers' comp or a third-party personal injury case, to get somebody that's going to fight for every penny.
Right. And I agree. Not every case goes to trial, but if you put yourself out there and fight for your clients for what's right, you're going to usually get a better recovery. They always say to really put the insurance company to task when you have a good chance of recovery. And if your chances of recovery are not excellent, you don't want to, one, create bad case law trying the wrong set of facts and trying to get the judge to agree with you. Mm-hmm. But then also, if you have a weaker case, you know, definitely things can blow up at trial. So I think those are things that you take into consideration. But yeah, I do try a lot of workers' comp cases. I believe so far this year I've tried 6 at the trial level. just in 2014, and two at the appellate level. So when you get in there and do it, the judges know, the other attorneys know, and the insurance companies know, but the judges really do know who goes to bat for their clients and tries the cases.
And you know, I'd be interested to hear y'all's thoughts, but I found the flip side of that's true as well. We'll get a case, we'll file the complaint, we'll get an answer, and you'll look at the defense attorney and you'll say, no way they're trying this case. And there are certain firms and defense attorneys that you know aren't going to try the case. And you know, if you push the case hard and the quicker you can get on a trial calendar, the higher and better settlement you're going to be able to get for your client, because they're not going to be found striking a jury on Monday morning.
Right. How important, like, you know, I guess the layperson, somebody who's a non-lawyer, just thinks about their own case and what they feel that they're entitled to. They don't realize that a lot of it is about statistics and track record. Do y'all find that track record is really important?
Well, yeah, as far as value, I mean, that's what insurance companies look at. We've got a case right now. It's a medical malpractice case where two of my favorite clients I've ever had, their family, they lost their son. And the insurance company has flat out told us, we had mediation last week, look, we know what these claims are. We've settled a million of them. We've tried a million of them. And this is the most we'll ever pay on it. And so I understand that, but we have to individually be able to look at our clients and evaluate it and just say, you know, I'm sorry, you know, these people aren't the 50th percentile, and be willing to take the case to trial and you know, move the meter up. So next time they look at a case and they look at you, they say, okay, well, maybe this is worth a little bit more.
That sounds good. Also, I wanted to mention briefly that about an organization that's near and dear to all trial lawyers' hearts, or should be. I in part picked the experts that I picked, Darrell, Doug, and Alan, because they are members of the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association.
Yes.
Which is a now 2,000 member strong throughout Georgia. And it's a great organization that helps fellow trial lawyers learn more about the practice and also network with each other. I want to say that, you know, I refer cases to these guys, and if they were not members of the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association, I probably wouldn't, not just because I like the organization, but because it's confirmation that they know a little bit about what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Georgia Trial Lawyers Association has continuing legal education and CLEs on almost every practice mm-hmm. area throughout the year. And I know that a lot of the attorneys that are involved in that organization know more and keep up to date with the law.
Sure. Sure. Well, we are just so glad that we had everybody here today. Laura, you need to tell us how to get in touch with you.
Sure. Absolutely. Again, I'm in Midtown Atlanta. My phone number is 404-876-4200. You can call 24 hours a day. We'll always have somebody that can help you. My website is www.reeslaw.com. That's R-E-I-S, like Sam, law.com. And thank you. Thank you, Emily, for
Absolutely.
Letting us.
I love the team effort.
Right.
And well, I'd love to hear about the GTLA as well.
Absolutely.
And you?
Yeah. And my website is thechampionfirm.com. Like I said, I've been in practice 3 weeks, so I think my website's been up for about 3 days. my phone number is 404-596-8044. I just now memorized that. I've been having to look at my business card every time I give my number to somebody. So I'm generally pretty available.
Thank you.
But this isn't his first rodeo. He just now has decided to go out on his own.
Absolutely.
So just wanted to clarify that part, that he was with another firm.
Right.
We're at shiverhamilton.com. That's Shiver, S-H-I-V-E-R, Hamilton.com. Our phone number is 404-593-0020.
And again, we're the Warshauer Law Group, W-A-R-S-H-A-U-E-R, lawgroup.com. I'm on Twitter at Doug Dumont, and phone is probably the best and easiest way. Like Laura said, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 404-892-4900.
Well, Rich, what do you think?
good stuff. I didn't want to tell you all earlier and make you nervous or whatever, but Charlotte is in the studio. Well, you've known she's been here for our social media expert. We've been trading notes and some pretty exciting news throughout the show. Twitter's just kind of blown up. This could be one of our best shows so far. What's the rough total? We had a single tweet that went out to almost 20,000 people, a single
wow.
tweet, and there's a bunch of other ones in the 1,000, 2,000 range. Yeah, we're probably pushing, what about, What's that? That sounds like a Baptist minister quote there, 50,000. But yeah, over 25,000 people just in the Twitter audience have been tuning in. So kudos to all y'all for being here. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And thanks for listening to Atlanta Legal Experts. This show is sponsored by DaVinci Virtual Offices and DaVinci Meeting Rooms. If you are interested in part-time offices, meeting rooms, or need a professional business address for your business or for a second location in Atlanta, you can find their links on our Atlanta Legal Experts website. That's ale.businessradiox.com, ale.businessradiox.com. Click on the DaVinci logo for AL listener specials and promotions, and don't forget to mention AL Radio. This is Emily Rowell with attorneyofficespace.com signing out.
Yeah, I think I need an AL right about right now. Yeah. Anybody want to join me? Yeah. All right, we'll see y'all next time, next week.
Thank you.
Thanks.